All right, it's officially the 12th month of the year. Part of what I think slows us down for the war on Christmas is that most of us who fight the war on Christmas don't believe that the Christmas season should really begin until December. Like, you know, when you're hanging up Christmas decorations before Halloween, there's a special war on Christmas POW camp for you, I think, is how that works out. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. I'm pretty sure I'm still Sam, despite all the wonderful cold drugs I'm on, making me feel horribly dissociative. But I'm pretty sure also joining me today is Becky. How are you?
I indeed am here, and I'm great.
And Bridget, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
So, Bridget, we're here to we're talking about some of your favorite things in this segment. We're talking about animals.
Yay!
Yes,
they're so
indeed
cute.
And one I happen to like, but perhaps for different reasons. A Swedish town's holiday tradition went up in flames when their three-story straw goat effigy was torched less than 24 hours after its erection. The town of Gavla, or Gavel, or Gale, perhaps, typically kicks off the Advent season by gathering around a large display, which is decorated with ribbons and lights. The town had spent the kroner equivalent of $250,000 to create a special 50th anniversary festival, which included extra security in light of arson in past years. The Yule Goat's Twitter account lamented its short time on this earth, but vowed to rise from the ashes. So is it a phoenix goat? Or is it just a phoenix? I don't know how that works.
Maybe Scandinavian myths are a little bit different with regarding a phoenix or you know, maybe just, you know, through oral tradition got changed into a barnyard animal.
Yeah, right? I mean, goats do so much for us, and I don't know why they'd want to burn it down.
I'm reasonably certain goats are not from Earth. You ever hang out with a goat?
Oh, yeah. No.
Yeah, they're aliens from space.
One of our friends had a pet goat. His name was Eeyore. Yeah. He was a cashmere. And he was extra special. but their eyes are just so weird.
Yeah.
And, I mean, our friends who had him, they lived in Edmonds, right? Suburb, right? And he would escape and eat the neighbor's landscaping. And so then they gave him to a friend that had 5 acres, and it was great. And he cleared an acre of blackberries in a week just by himself because he was,
Becky,
down to the root and everything.
I think you've got competition.
For blackberry eating? I just eat the berries. I don't eat the whole bramble.
Well, get on it then.
Eat the whole thing.
I mean, competition with a goat? A goat is not... Well, I mean, I cannot compete with a three-story straw and stick goat wrapped in red ribbon.
No. I mean, yeah, goats are pretty weird with their eyes and their, like, you know, 3 or 4 eyelids, and the fact that the eyes detach from the goat and follow you around if...
It's like a Mona Lisa
or is
kind
that,
of goat.
Yeah. Is that just me?
No, it's totally how goats are. Right. And the way that they just like come up and headbutt you is just a greeting. And I mean, but that's sort of my question about this whole thing. Like, why a goat? Like, what is it that
to appease
tradition?
The evil alien gods? Of course. Why not?
I also like that this is specifically a Christmas tradition, but in so many of our more zealotous, evangelical American Christian traditions, you have goats as the symbol of the devil.
Uh-huh.
And yet this wonderful Scandinavian town kind of, you know, just gathers. I'm imagining it a little bit like the small towns that have, you know, your town green, your gazebo, and what. Okay, I kind of did grow up in a little town like that, and I have been maybe possibly watching a little bit much of Gilmore Girls.
And you spell story with an E.
Quaint and have
Suddenly
weird
British.
Affectations about writing, about just, goats.
It's only weird in North America, Becky. That's all I've been saying.
Well, I think burning a goat would be equally weird in North America, let alone a three-story goat. It kind of reminds me a little bit of the, the big, like the Wicker Man kind of effigies. Except
no, it's not supposed to burn.
True.
Well,
okay.
Yeah. This isn't burning goat.
Except that, I mean, apparently it is a thing that happens. Like, it's been burned down several times enough that they increased security this year.
So it's like a weird Sharks versus Jets war in this Swedish town where some people want it to be burning goat. And then, like, one gang wants it to be burning goat. And then the other gang wants it to be a more traditional, less naked people holiday. That's a movie.
Right?
I imagine at Christmas in Sweden, it's a little tough
cold.
To go naked.
I'm sure that there's
that doesn't
who would
stop
do
some people. Yeah. I just, you know, I mean, being from one of those kind of cold places, some people don't care.
Yeah.
The other thing is, I was thinking, like, we were making the Phoenix reference. So I got this image of in my head of this winged goat flying from the ashes. And for some reason, the music that accompanied it was Reading Rainbow.
What?
I don't know why.
I'm not going to take your word for it.
But I think if we have any, say, vector animators who could make a goat rising from the ashes to the tune of Reading Rainbow, I think that would be something that would make me happy.
And then tweet it at the Gavlebakken Twitter account, because this goat tweets. It's a bilingual goat. It's a bilingual dead burn rising from the ashes goat.
I'm pretty sure, especially now, it's not the goat that's tweeting.
Okay, fair.
Yeah.
But I love that, you know, with the advent of Twitter, you have characters and spirits of things that will then tweet out. We had in Canada, the Roadkill Raccoon that had a Twitter account. Uh-huh. You have for Camp Quests, different mascots have different Twitter accounts.
Yep.
Yeah.
So all sorts of things that tweet. And
the other thing about goats? Pretty tasty.
I've never eaten it.
It's good.
I've known too many goats personally to be able to.
Actually, knowing goats personally makes it fairly easy to eat them, because goats can be pretty mean.
But I love them.
Because I feel like I'm evolutionarily winning when I eat goat. Yeah, it's like, I'm literally meaner than you are. Chomp, chomp, chomp. Nah, nah, nah. You know, that kind of thing.
It's really cute. It's wrapped in these, like, beautiful red ribbons, the kinds of things that you associate with Swedish Christmas, of the, you know, the six-pointed stars, or lights, the Santa Lucia Day, and, you know, the red velvet ribbons and the straw, and it's just very pretty. And this poor little guy, poor big guy.
Big.
Three-story goat. Gets
torched less than 24 hours after, you know, he was finished and completed. So
I actually don't know if there are different strains, different types of goat for eating and for not eating. I mean, I don't imagine a lot of people eating cashmere goats out there.
Yeah, no, yeah. Cashmere goats are much more, I mean, they're valuable for their wool. And I imagine fainting goats, they're pretty tiny. They wouldn't really make a good meal, but...
Well, that's kind of their purpose. Their developmental purpose is to be a male for something.
For something.
Isn't it? Yeah. here it is. I guess I can stop running now.
Very anxious goats. I would imagine that they have a lot of adrenaline kind of running through them, and no.
All right.
Anxious goats, you just put them in a chicken costume or a duck costume. It's great.
So speaking of North America spellings of things and just North America in general, this next one is fairly North America, or at least fairly. I go this and I like, America.
America. Yeah.
Sheriff's officers in Charlotte Hall, Maryland, apprehended a beaver who had broken into a dollar store and allegedly vandalized artificial Christmas tree products. The sheriff reported that the suspect attempted to flee the area, but county animal control managed to take the flat-tailed rodent to a wildlife rehab center to be released back into nature.
Aww.
Yay!
He wanted to try and chomp his way through a Christmas tree, and all he realizes, man, this is just a plastic piece of junk.
It's like, aww.
Speaking of the advent of Twitter, right? You have the sheriff's officers tweeting out these pictures of this beautiful little cartoony beaver, right?
He's so cute with his little hands.
Yeah, he's got like little itty bitty hands with his little opposable joints and everything, and he's got his little flat tail. I mean, he looks like a cartoon beaver,
he
right?
He really does. Yeah. He's the quintessential.
And they say, call at such and such dollar store for destruction of property. And,
yeah, find out it's a beaver.
Try to flee the flee the scene of his vandalism.
So I guess the question is, does this dollar store have a outside exit, or is the only entrance into the dollar store mall, like in the mall itself? So I guess what I'm saying is, how many doors did this beaver have to break his way through? Is it just one from the outside, or did it break into the mall and like hung out in the mall for a while going, wow, there's a lot of food in here. Not a lot of creaks though. So, I guess I'll go in there and look a tree. I know what to do with the tree. And then goes into like, cause one is just a thing that happens. When there's a lot of wildlife around you. The other is potentially a plot for a digitally animated film by DreamWorks available this time next year.
Oh, is this guerrilla marketing? Oh, sounds awesome.
I'm suggesting it should be if it isn't, I guess.
I also can't ignore the fact that this story was picked up by a lot of media outlets in a very, you know, joyful and silly way as we're covering it, but billed as, you know, the war on Christmas extends to the animal kingdom.
We control the animal kingdom!
All right, Dr. Doolittle.
No, not my department. I'm less of a nice conversation and more like implants and electrodes, kind of. Yeah.
If you're not eating them, chomp,
unless,
chomp,
yeah. I'm less Dr. Doolittle, more Dr. Moreau, I guess.
So I like to think, if I were scripting the DreamWorks episode on this, he would be an atheist pagan beaver that would chomp his way through the wooden door of a dollar store and get to the dollar store and look at the tree and be completely confused because it's not a wooden tree, and they say, what, people actually do things with these? And
in what sense do you mean the word pagan? Do you just mean not Christian, or do you mean like somebody
of the people who originally took trees into their dwelling places during the winter solstice time to take nature into your home and light them up and things
and
like
set
that,
them on fire?
Yeah. You know, because original Christians, you know, weren't so hot on bringing trees and adorning them with silver and gold, right?
Well,
isn't there like a law against that and stuff?
Because that there's a lot of pine trees to be had.
There's some cedars, you know, cedars of Lebanon.
Well,
et cetera,
that burns nice.
Yeah.
Never mind.
We're not burning that. That was the goat. The goat was for burning.
Oh, okay.
The tree is for...
No, this is the war on Christmas. Everything should be on fire.
Everything should be on fire.
Not the beaver. Beaver gets to go to his rehab center and then released into nature.
Beaver's an ally on our side. Hello. Yes.
Oh, right. Beaver's on our side. Okay. Yeah. But...
Lieutenant Colonel Beaver.
Corporal Beaver.
Corporal Beaver.
Commander Beaver.
I'm really liking where this is going, but I'm slightly confused.
I am too. I'm a lot,
So is this guerrilla marketing for a DreamWorks?
No, it's beaver marketing.
Oh. Got it.
Get it
beaver
right.
Marketing.
Are we having to script this and make this next year's family-friendly, atheist-friendly, humanist-friendly holiday flick?
Let's do it.
I don't know, because it does have the plot of one of those animated movies that use the kind of music that they always use in movies, like the
little pizzicato and
hey, you're a rock star or something like that they use in every freaking movie. So this is like it feels like an animated, you know, but it feels like a bad one.
Oh, like the beaver needs a skateboard.
Yeah, the beaver needs to have an attitude. No, that's 90s.
Not a skateboard, a hoverboard. Yeah, because that's the big thing, right?
Like an actual hoverboard or what they call
a hoverboard? What they're
like
calling
the Segway without the handlebars. Yeah.
Okay, because believe me,
it's not.
They don't hover.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
I know.
Sam, you didn't end up hovering for very long.
Oh, I hovered for about 40 milliseconds before I moved quickly to the ground at a speed I hadn't previously since like leaping from 20 feet in the air.
Yeah.
It was
you haven't you had not prior nor since achieved that speed.
Yeah, I've spent about 3.5 seconds on a hoverboard, and
ooh,
I don't think I'll ever be on one ever again.
So are you the slapstick villain of this Christmas flick where the beaver bests you?
No,
with the
clearly
hoverboard?
I'm the voice of the guy on the radio doing all the news reports of the beaver destroying the
town.
Oh
yeah.
I mean, if I'm gonna be cast, I might as well be typecast, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair.
Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. The University Unitarian Humanists, Seattle Atheists, and the Humanists of Washington cordially invite freethinkers, their families, and friends from Seattle and beyond to celebrate the coming winter solstice with our annual solstice potluck on Saturday, December 10th from 5 to 8 p.m. at the University Unitarian Church in Seattle. This year, we are encouraging attendees to bring new socks to donate to Treehouse, an organization benefiting foster youth in the greater Seattle area. Children are a welcome and essential part of this celebration. For more information, visit humanistsofwashington.org or seattleatheists.org.
Allegedly, soccer is a beautiful game.
It is when you know what's going on.
That's the problem. MLS is 20 years old, and people are still shocked to hear that there's an American Soccer League.
That's why you and I are talking about it. This is a discussion of American soccer for nerds and beginners. It's a good first step if a crippling soccer addiction is something that's missing from your life.
Join the club. Celebrate the 20th anniversary of MLS by actually following the season.
Hands-free football. New episodes every week at handsfreefootball.com.
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Doran, and we want to ask you an important question.
Are you sick and tired of other panel discussion shows wasting your time droning on and on about foreign policy, economics, and human rights?
Or do you want to hear conversations about things that actually matter?
We host a podcast called Radio Versus the Martians. Every month, we gather a panel of our nation's finest minds and plunge a rusty prison shank into the heart of tough questions that have an impact on the lives of real people like you.
Like, are drivers required to pull over for the Ghostbusters?
Is United Federation of Planets actually an oppressive dictatorship run by guidance counselors?
Is Arnold Schwarzenegger secretly a genius?
And are we being mean when we laugh at movies that are so bad they're good?
So write your congressman and let them know that Radio vs. the Martians is available on iTunes, Stitcher, and on RadioVersusTheMartians.com.
Hasn't God We Trust invaded your town? Are you tired of government officials who want to plaster "In God We Trust" on taxpayer-owned property? Are you afraid because your local sheriff placed an "In God We Trust" decal on the patrol cars? We are here to help. The original motto project is for those who feel the separation of church and state is an important issue and should be honored regardless of your belief or lack thereof. Theists, non-theists, and all free thinkers are welcome. We need your support to show politicians that diversity exists within our nation, and their promotion of a monotheistic religion and push for theocracy will not be tolerated. Stand up and be heard. Join us at originalmotto.us.
My name is Jonathan Ariola of TDTF Pod. The more voices you hear, the more we observe and feel, the more we learn about the other facets of this complex and wondrous beast that is humanism and free thought. Join me on the science-loving journey through topics like justice, murder, family, diligence, taste, history, society, race, boob jobs, law, addiction, video games, fear, sacrifice, children. Wait a minute, not sacrificing children, that's not what I meant. Bring the popcorn and watch me break down the issues too deep, too fast. Join me at TDTF Pod. I'm Jonathan Ariola. Talk to you soon.
Moving on to Peggy's Challenge, I'd like to thank Movie Man from the internet and Mike from Radio vs. the Martians, a voice familiar to you all, for meeting Peggy's Challenge. Peggy's Challenge is a listeners to ask of Ask an Atheist by Peggy from Kent to help us keep the lights on. If you go to our website at askanatheist.tv, click on the yellow button on the right-hand side, take you directly to our PayPal page. Every dollar you give us goes directly toward show production. And that's if you like to give, you know, a one-time thing when you get some extra money and you really like the show. Thank you. The other thing is I also have a Patreon. Right next to the Peggy's Challenge button is a link to our Patreon page. It's actually, I need to be a little bit more honest, it's my Patreon page. Goes directly towards supporting the show, the studio, other projects that I have cooking, other podcasting projects, other technical projects, things like that.
Wait, Sam, can we assure any patrons and contributors that none of the money will actually be used to make a War on Christmas Beaver movie?
No, that's a different Kickstarter.
Can you neither confirm nor deny that?
No, I can confirm that I wouldn't use that for that. No.
No, we'll set up a separate Kickstarter for it.
Yeah, I am. I am learning Blender, which is a 3D animation suite. But I'm using it as a nonlinear editor. I'm using it for video, not for animations, because I am not an artist. Well, I'm not a visual artist. That's for certain. So, next week, actually six
Saturday.
Days from today, we will be at the Unitarian Universalist University.
University Unitarian Universalist Church.
Ubiquity underwriting.
You betcha.
A lot of use. Every time there's an acronym with a lot of vowels in it, I always go on.
So what are we going to be doing there, Sam?
I don't know. You tell me.
It's actually fun. So it's really fun. So Seattle Atheists, Humanists of Washington, Humanists of North Puget Sound, big regional event, and we'll be there for our winter potluck celebrating the coming solstice.
Yeah.
I'm going to be sort of running the kids' activities.
Okay.
Surprise, surprise.
Yeah.
So I'll be doing some crafts and
I may be in the kitchen again. That's yet to be determined, but that's generally what I've been doing the last few years.
Yep.
So
it is a potluck.
Yeah.
So we invite everyone to bring things. And Bridget, you're going to be there?
Yep, I'll be there. I wouldn't miss it. It's always been a lot of fun, so.
Yeah. So if you notice that a lot of us have things to do, we are still looking for volunteers for things, are we not, Becky?
Yes. And it would be really awesome if you're local and coming. We've got setup starting at about 3, but the actual dinner is 5 to 8. So there's a lot of stuff that goes into making this event happen, and it is a joint effort between a lot of organizations, and we're very happy to be working with the Unitarian Church and with Seattle Atheists and Humanists of Washington to all make it happen, and it's a really nice way to come together and celebrate something in a non-religious way.
So we've been hopping back and forth across the Atlantic Ocean, and once again we will hop back, but this time to the UK, for a story. Not a great one, but this is one that we should probably cover, and you probably know what to do with this one, I'm assuming.
You're thinking I have some insight on something,
yeah,
Sam.
You are kind of our Jewish culture correspondant, are you not?
I mean, in the most Daily Show way possible? No,
yeah.
Actually in a little bit more authentic than Daily Show way possible.
I think of it in terms of the Daily Show way, but you actually have some data to provide on this. Anyway, a family court judge in London has ruled against a divorced ultra-Orthodox Jewish woman who sought to bar her children from contact with their father after he left the Satmar religious community. The unidentified woman accused her ex-husband of risking exposing their children to the concept of evolution during a museum visit, permitting them to ride bikes and use electronic devices on the Sabbath, and of removing his kippah, or head covering, in their presence. The judge ruled that the children should spend equal time with each parent, stating that their father, who continues to practice Judaism outside of the strict community, had not deliberately caused problems for his kids. All right, so honestly, you're going to need to unpack this one for us a little bit.
Okay, so the Satmar religious community is amongst the most zealous and insular of the Hasidic or ultra-Orthodox sects of Judaism. And I actually have family members who are descended from Satmar Hasidim and still practice, you know, second, third cousins that still practice within the very insular community, this side of the Atlantic, United States side. We see what happens when, you know, divorce is legal in this particular community, but what happens is someone who leaves that community and they're divorced, they're completely ostracized, completely shunned. And we're seeing, you know, something come up between our civic law in terms of marriage contracts, in this case in England, and what the religious tradition would say about it. And, you know, what's really interesting is we can laugh and say, ha, this mother is completely irrational and ridiculous by saying, oh, my goodness, their father is poisoning them by making them aware that tablets, you know, exist and not in the Ten Commandments tablets. You know, this is like you can use a tablet on the Sabbath kind of thing. I think one of the complaints was they were at a crosswalk and the dad permitted the kid to push the button to have the crosswalk, you know, light go on the Sabbath, and they were riding bicycles. You know, and the father is still a practitioner of Judaism, just not as strict and not as insular as his ex-wife. And it's tough to sort of look at that. But one of the other really weird things about this case is that reading into it, it's been going on for a while. And initially, the judge had sort of scolded the father for saying, hey, on this museum trip to whatever natural history museum or something, the kids could have been exposed to evolution, which would marginalize them within their community because the kids at the time were still living full time with their mother. And the judge.
This is the UK, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you UK guys that keep going, you know, just
yeah.
Keep that in mind.
So the judge had scolded the dad for you know, possibly exposing them to something that would have marginalized them within their mother's community. Mm-hmm. But I think that what's a nice resolution to this is after some really contentious divorce and custody hearings, the judge looks and says, hey, you know what? The dad's just trying to live his life, and it's important that he has contact with his kids. And the mom needs to be understanding that the dad's going to do stuff differently. The dad can also be understanding that when they're with their mom,
the idea that just merely exposing somebody to a piece of data is going to ostracize them from their community, regardless of their response to that information, that's a little above and beyond, I think.
Yeah, I think, you know, in situations like this, kids need to see that there are differences, and I'm glad that the judge ruled the way that he did, because it's like, you can't, I find it actually a form of child abuse to isolate your children from reality.
Right.
You know? And so, I mean, I side with the dad on this a whole lot more, and I probably would have given, him full custody, but that's me. In this situation, though, I think the judge had it totally right.
So we describe it as insular. I don't know anything about the Satmar community. Can you describe it in some detail? I mean, are we talking like Amish levels
To a certain degree, yeah. When people think of American Amish communities as being very withdrawn from modern life, there's a lot of parallels and similarities. You're only allowed to wear very specific things. So we're looking at the men who wear the long black coats and the black hats. Boys don't cut their side curls or boys don't cut their hair until age 3, and then after that they keep the side curls.
Okay. That's not.
Girls don't expose anything above their ankles or forearms. And once you are married, then you must cover your hair out of modesty. Many of the kids don't learn English as their first language. They speak
English. That's more, facial hair styles is not that big of a deal. The head covering thing, that's not just the Satmar community. That I've heard about that from
many Orthodox sects. Yeah.
Not learning English. Now we're in new territory.
So we have a home language, and, parents have a right to raise their kid in a home language. But at the same time, they're preventing their children from exposure to the outside world. So then sometimes when they do try and interact, they're very much at a disadvantage because they don't communicate clearly in English and have never had any kind of intervention to add that capacity to their learning, and they often have very, very little exposure to any kind of secular studies. Girls are expected to have very specific gender roles involved in child rearing. Boys are expected to have encyclopedic Talmudic knowledge and less secular knowledge, we've seen children who have been raised in these kinds of communities, at least in the United States, go back and actually sue the state or sue their parents for depriving them of educational access.
So, all right. So we're talking about traditional gender roles within a Judeo-Christian religion, which means I'm assuming the women don't go to work. They don't have careers.
Typically not.
And you have male children don't learn English or don't learn other languages, don't get exposed to technology. Most of their educational experience is encyclopedic knowledge of the Talmud, it sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
That leads me to a question. How are these communities supported?
In the United States, we have a lot of these very large communities because they subscribe to be fruitful and multiply. So you'll often have, 11, 12, 13 kids per family.
Okay.
A lot of times they receive state aid. They're on welfare.
Right.
There's also a pressure within the communities of those who do have a lot of money, either through like family investments or things like that. This is where sometimes you'll see jewelers and bankers and lenders and things like that to then support the community. But it's for a lot of them an existence of poverty.
That was the thing is where's, people, you need resources for food and housing and stuff like that, and where that would come from. And the Amish, I was bringing up the Amish specifically because they kind of build it themselves and live in incredibly insular communities.
But there is a work ethic on self-sufficiency and providing for everyone through, you know, farming and growing and building.
And there's a parity between those two communities.
There is to some degree, but I do not, in my experience, know of Satmar communities who live in the middle of London or the middle of Lakewood, New Jersey, who are sitting there farming and building their own
apartments. Is that where these
apartments.
Places generally are?
They generally are in suburban or urban areas. Now, when you look at ultra-Orthodox Jewish, you know, Jewish communities, you have some that are known for being, you know, sort of like of the more jolly or ecstatic, religiously fervent, but ecstatic sort of celebratory bent. And in my experience, the Satmar Chasidim are not that. I was told of my relatives, you know, growing up, that if I, as a modern American woman who was by heritage Jewish, walked through their neighborhood wearing pants on the Sabbath, that I might get rocks thrown at me.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
So this is sort of the stark contrast between different communities. You can be very religiously observant, but have different ideas about how to put those religious beliefs into action.
Yeah, as somebody from, you know, again, not a religious background, it's these sorts of communities that every religion I've ever encountered seems to have their, you know, their version of, and I've always wondered how they're put together and how they exist in a more of a monoculture substrate, I guess is how I would describe
it. Yeah, I mean that's sort of like I'm really familiar with like Amish culture, but they are isolated geographically as well.
Right.
They're not in like suburban or urban areas, and so you can really shelter them from the technology and the reality of the world that we live in. But if you're living in the middle of these like really populated areas, how do you do that without causing serious harm?
Well, a linguistic barrier. Well, I some would argue harm on either side.
I would agree with that.
Yeah,
but
like a linguistic barrier and a just a distance barrier might have the same effect.
Right, right, and I mean the Amish use their Dutch language.
Yeah, and some of them don't speak English.
And they don't
as
speak
well.
English.
Yeah,
but they are also, you know, they're not seeing the billboards. They're not seeing the other people with all of this technology and all of this stuff because they're geographically separated.
Maybe
but
not.
But if you're in the middle of, you know, this, you know, New Jersey or whatever, and you're seeing the billboards, you're seeing the technology, you're not as isolated physically. How are you keeping that information from these children without, you know, outright lying to them, without, are they doing that? Is that like...
Well, it's, yeah, you're preventing movement, you're preventing access to it. And Satmar, the Satmar Hasidic sect has really come under criticism this year specifically for issuing a no girls should get any kinds of degrees decree, and I've pulled it up here, and it says that it's lately become the new trend that girls and married women are pursuing degrees in special education. Now, this means not special education like to teach children with learning disabilities, just in specialized areas of education. There's a little bit of translation error here because this is written in Yiddish because that's their primary language.
Right.
Said some attend classes and others online, so we'd like to let their parents know that this is against the Torah. Right. Okay, so Torah, five books of Moses, somehow had a prohibition against online classes? Because that makes sense. And it said, we will be very strict about this. No girls attending our school are allowed to study and get a degree. It is dangerous.
I like to be about cultural, you know, do your own thing, let your freak flag fly, be a member of the culture you were born in, diversity is nice, that sort of thing. But when you start limiting education across the board, but especially you start making gender decisions about education, that's nuts. That's not a good thing.
When knowledge is dangerous,
is
that
denied.
Is a problem.
Yeah.
If I may even say, it gets worse.
Oh, God.
Okay.
Also, we will not give any jobs or teaching positions in our school to girls who have been taught college or have a degree. The only kids, the only women who are allowed to be teachers of girls in the girls section of the Satmar Hasidic school, because they don't go to public school, are girls who were girls that didn't get knowledge, didn't get any, that aren't allowed to have knowledge as a woman.
Wow.
Okay.
So I have a sort of a follow-up question. With, like, in the Amish culture, they have the Rumspringa, or the time when they can go out into the community, the real world, or the English world, as they say, and they learn about it. Does this Satmar, does this culture have the same sort of situation? Do they have any chance to go out and experience reality?
Not to my knowledge. I mean, yes, if you have the, if you break with your community and go outside it, you end up like the dad who loses visitation of his children for 2 years until a secular judge says, you know what, it's really important for someone to, we've had a lot of people who have talked about leaving these ultra-Orthodox communities, and most often they're ostracized, they're cut off financially, they are dead to their religious family.
Differences between this and Scientology
are they getting fewer and fewer?
Hard to detect.
Pretty minimal, yeah.
And that's the end of this podcast. You can go to our website at askanatheist.tv. Email us at questions@askanatheist.tv. You can voicemail us at 844-753-7842. That's 844-SKEPTIC. You can visit us on Twitter on askanatheistwa. This episode was pre-recorded. Thank you guys very much. See you next week.